BBC World Service. 30-Minute Theatre. We present A Question of Retreat by Robin Morm, starring Denham Elliott as Fletcher, with John Gillett as Holden. A Question of Retreat.
Excuse me. I wonder if I might speak with you. I heard you were living somewhere here in the jungle of Sri Lanka, so I managed to find out the exact spot and came out to meet you.
How do you do? Would you care to come in?
Thank you.
You'll find a mat in the corner. I suggest you unroll it and sit down on it. Well, I'm glad you've taken off your sandals. A Buddhist monk expects to be greeted as such. You know, of course, it's an affront to sit in the presence of a Buddhist monk with the soles of one's feet exposed to his gaze.
Sorry.
How did you find out I lived here?
I went to the Buddhist island hermitage.
You visited the island hermitage. And, what did you think of the place?
I found it very peaceful and fascinating.
Where do you come from?
London.
Are you studying Buddhism?
No, but I'm interested in it. I've read several books on Buddhism, but I can't say I've understood any of them.
What aspect worries you?
I feel I can understand the Buddhist concept that if one leads a virtuous existence, then one is reborn into a better form of life. And I can understand that if one is bad and evil, one will be reborn into a lower and worse form of life. But what I can't understand is this. What is the point of reaching nirvana, the final stage of enlightenment? When one attains nirvana, one is said to understand the whole riddle of the universe, and then the chain of birth and rebirth ends. But what is the point of ending one's existence?
The whole point is to put an end to the pointless farce of living. Aren't you tired of the pain and misery one has to suffer in this life?
Let's suppose for a moment it is a pointless farce. Then surely there must be some explanation for it. But so far as I can see, Buddhism offers no explanation for our existence.
Oh, yeah, that is true. The reason is that the Lord Buddha saw the matter was beyond our powers of comprehension. And obviously the intelligent man prefers no explanation to a false one.
What made you decide to become a Buddhist?
Have you by any chance come here to interview me for a newspaper?
Yes, if you're prepared to be interviewed. You see, I'm writing a series of articles about Buddhism in Sri Lanka, and I'd like one of my pieces to be about you.
Which paper are you writing for?
I'm freelance.
What's your name?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I should have told you as soon as I came in. It's Paul Holden.
Can't say I've heard of you.
Not many people have.
Do you know my name?
Yes. The Venerable Nyantoli.
That is correct. But didn't they tell you my name before I was ordained?
Yes. It was Fletcher. Edward Fletcher. You were the most promising politician of your generation. You were tipped to be the next leader of your party.
Well, I can see you've done your homework.
What happened? Why did you give it all up? I wonder if you'd mind if I made some notes.
Oh, what is it you want to know?
Well, first of all, I'd like to know what made you become a Buddhist.
I suppose it began by a feeling that I didn't belong. I mean, as a child, I felt I didn't belong with my family. And when I got a bit older, I discovered I certainly didn't belong to the public school they insisted on sending me to.
Which school did you go to?
Oundle. You weren't at Oundle, were you?
No, I wasn't. How old were you when you left school?
17. Then I travelled round Europe for a year, in France and Italy mostly. Then I went to Balliol. While I was at Oxford, my interest in Buddhism started. I'd been reading some work on comparative religions, and suddenly it dawned on me that Buddhism at least offered a logical explanation to the problem of pain. Christian apologists have a difficult time explaining away pain. How can an all-wise, all-powerful God allow a child to die of leukemia? But if our apparently undeserved suffering in this life is caused by our wickedness or cruelty in a previous incarnation, then at least there is a reason for our misery. So I began to study Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
Soon after I came down from Oxford, the war broke out, so I joined up and was sent to Port Said. My job was interrogating prisoners. Well, I hated it. I was bored. In the evenings, there was nothing to do except go around the bars and drink.
And after the war?
Well, I came back and settled in London. I had private means, so I didn't have to work. I tried to get as much pleasure out of life as I could, but somehow I found I wasn't happy. I felt it was all pretty futile. I think I was aware that the horrors of the war hadn't caused much to change. Now, that's when I became seriously interested in politics. Of course, I didn't win my seat the first time round, but once I was safely elected to Parliament, I began to make my presence felt.
Did the war have anything to do with your decision to become a monk?
Well, I think it hastened my decision because the war forced maturity onto me. And a sentence in a book I read at the time much influenced me. Now, Buddhism, I read, is the doctrine of non-attachment. And that was important. Not so much my own non-attachment, but the non-attachment of others to me. My parents were very fond of me, particularly my mother. I had an elder brother, but he died of leukemia when I was 7. However, even before his death, my mother was more devoted to me than to my brother. My father was an economist, but he died shortly after the war, and then my mother fastened all her affection onto me. And I knew that I had to get away. The moment of decision came at the end of a long and tiring day in London.
What happened?
I'd had lunch with the leader of the party, I remember. I looked in at a cocktail party, and then I went to dine with some political colleagues. And suddenly I was sickened by it all. So few of them were genuine. Most of them were just out for themselves, whichever side they were on. After dinner, we went on to a party at a Chelsea studio, and I was half drunk already. And I got myself a glass of whiskey and walked out into the garden. It was a cloudless summer night. And as I stared up at the stars, suddenly the truth came to me. A brilliant light seemed to flood over me. Gradually, as the light faded away, I became calmer. And then I was able to understand the revelation of truth which I'd seen. I'd realized that the political life I was leading was utterly pointless. And I saw that the whole of existence was a wretched farce. It was then I decided to give up my life in England. I decided to abandon my Western existence altogether and go to Sri Lanka to become a Buddhist monk.
Yes.
Well, I spent a year in the island hermitage, and I learned the language and studied for the priesthood, and in 1970 I was ordained. For several years I travelled round Sri Lanka with my begging bowl, instructing people in Buddhism. But then I caught typhoid and nearly died, and the illness left me with a tiresome gastric trouble. I decided to give up teaching and lead the life of contemplation as a hermit. I've lived here now for nearly 10 years. Careful! You have the caterpillar. It's by your foot. There. No, look. By your foot.
That caterpillar. Would you have released it in the jungle if it had been a poisonous snake?
Well, certainly. Because a Buddhist doesn't believe in taking the life of any living creature.
Are you a vegetarian?
No.
Then how do you reconcile your belief with eating meat?
Provided one has no part in the killing of it, one can eat meat. So a monk can accept meat that is brought to him as alms, provided he doesn't hear or see the animal being killed, and provided he doesn't suspect it had been killed especially for him.
That argument is as bogus as the excuse of a woman who disapproves of killing animals, but buys herself a fur coat on the grounds that the animal is already dead. I see you have a revolver by your bed. If you don't believe in killing, why keep a gun?
There are animals marauding around this hut at night. When the noise becomes unbearable, I go out onto the veranda and I fire a shot into the air. The noise seems to scare them away.
I see. What about killing oneself?
If an ordinary person commits suicide, it is wrong. For the person is depriving himself of the wisdom he may gain by the study of the teachings of our Lord Buddha. But if a monk who has attained liberation kills himself, then it is only a minor offence in our philosophy, because the monk is merely anticipating the next stage in the chain of rebirth.
Mm. Doesn't loneliness frighten you? Don't you feel very much alone, living by yourself in this jungle, with no other person for miles around?
Well, when I first came here, it took me some time to get used to the sounds of the jungle, but I never suffered any pangs of loneliness. No, one becomes self-contained. If people arrive and disturb one, then one speaks only words of dismissal to
them. Am I disturbing you?
Not as yet.
How do you eat? How do you keep going?
Yeah, well, the villagers are very good about it. That's partly because I'm European, and, well, they feel I must have great piety to renounce all that the West has to offer. And therefore they believe that giving to me will bring them more merit. Now, Buddhists believe there is more merit to be obtained from giving to a man who is moral than in giving to a rogue. But sometimes the villagers forget. So the following morning, I take my begging bowl into the village and I'll be given food. Now, you see, I have no money. I have no money. Not a penny. Now, if I ever have to go to Colombo to see a doctor, for instance, I mean, I take my begging bowl and I stand by the bus stop. Now, people would presently come up to me, and they'd try to put food into my bowl, but I'd cover it up with my hand. And then they would ask me, "What is it you require, venerable sir?" And I would reply, "A bus ticket to Colombo." I wouldn't say the money for a bus ticket, because a bhikkhu mustn't handle money. Hmm. Now, the reason for this rule is that the Lord Buddha intended to put temptation out of man's way, and with money you can buy a woman. And our Buddhist monk's bank balance is his begging bowl. I mean, even his clothes are given to him.
By the way, I suppose it was quite in order for me to bow to you as I did when I arrived.
You were perfectly correct.
I'm glad I did the right thing. But would you now consider it a lack of respect if I asked to get up from this mat? I could then carry on my interview while sitting in the chair. It would be far easier for me to take my notes.
Merely because the colour of your skin happens to be white, and merely because you happen to have had some form of education, I see no reason why the ordinary conventions of my religion shouldn't apply to you.
I would have thought that since we were alone together, you might have decided to relax the rule. Merely from a consideration of good manners.
You must allow me to be the judge of good manners.
Certainly. After all, you're my host.
And you are an uninvited guest.
When you look back on the life you led in politics, when you remember your friends and your ambitions, don't you have any regrets?
No, I can't say I have any regrets about such things, or indeed about matters of sensuality. One advantage of these surroundings is that you don't put yourself in the way of temptation. Sensuality is like an electric light. You can switch it on or off.
Can you really? How?
Well, by considering your flesh, by considering its inevitable decay.
Did problems of sex oppress you in England?
Sometimes I... But now I find the very thought of sex abhorrent.
I can understand why you have no regrets. But what about your family? What do they feel about it?
My family? Well, my father died, as I told you, and I'm afraid my mother was desperately upset when I gave up politics and became ordained, but I couldn't change my mind. She came here to try to persuade me to go back to England, but I refused point blank. And this distressed my mother so much she had a heart attack. However, I still refused to change my mind. So as soon as she was fit to travel again, she left Sri Lanka, and when she reached home, she made one more attempt to lure me back to her. She brought a country house in Surrey and sent me a photograph of it. Of course, I wasn't interested, and I sent her a message to that effect. Soon afterwards, she died. But you mean my mother's death didn't worry me in the least. You can't comprehend that the whole point of Buddhism is to bring to an end this farcical existence. The whole point is to reach nirvana. To try to understand that there is no purpose in life such as going upwards and onwards. Can't you see that nothing lasts, nothing is permanent? Power is certainly transitory. So the wise man, when he sees there's nothing he can hold forever, chooses to opt out. But to get out of the race needs complete unselfishness and goodness and understanding.
I can see that.
Where are you staying?
I expect I'll stay tonight in Gaul. I've got a jeep at the end of the path.
You'll go presently, and we may never meet again, so I don't want you to misunderstand me. Try to realize that I'm no longer concerned about my past. When you ask me questions about my past life, I have to think quite hard before I answer them. If you write about me, I'm sure you're far too much of a realist to attempt a romantic portrait of me.
You're quite correct.
Well, I admit I suffer pain. I admit that in a material sense I've made great sacrifices to lead the life I do, but please understand this. It's no real sacrifice to give up everything for the sake of doing what you want to do.
Will you never go back to England?
Well, I've no desire to go back, but if my health were to become so bad I couldn't continue to lead my life as I want to out here, well, I would just have to go back, I suppose, and face the publicity.
But if you decided to return to England, I don't even see how you'd get there. If you went and stood at your bus stop, they'd be unlikely to put an air ticket to London into your begging bowl.
Well, of course they wouldn't.
Then how would you get a ticket?
Well, I'd ask them to send me a ticket out from England.
Who would you ask? A ticket from Colombo to London costs at least £200.
Well, I dare say some old friend would lend me the money.
Some old friend you haven't seen for many years?
Well, it's possible.
It's possible. But it's a possibility you weren't considering a minute ago when you announced that you might just have to go back. So I'm interested in the answer to my question.
If you wanted an air ticket sent out here quickly, to whom would you write? Your bank, of course.
I thought you said you hadn't any money.
I told you I had no money out here, and I haven't.
You said, I have no money, not one penny. Obviously, I took that to mean you hadn't a penny in the world. Wasn't that what you intended me to conclude?
Nonsense. I intended to convey that I'd no cash out here.
I believe you. I find it very easy to believe you, because you don't need any money out here. As you yourself so neatly put it, a Buddhist monk's bank balance is his begging bowl, correct? So what in effect you're telling me is that when you came to Sri Lanka, you left all your money behind in England?
Yes.
So during the last dozen years, the interest must have been accumulating.
I dare say I'm not very interested in money.
I can believe you're not. People who have an assured income can afford not to be. So what it amounts to is that during the last 10 years or so, you've been living on charity, but knowing that at any moment you could cable to your bank for any amount of cash you required. So what are these great sacrifices you're supposed to have made?
Material sacrifices?
Such as?
Well, we had a flat in Pond Street.
Which you gave up?
Yes.
But when your mother died, didn't you inherit the proceeds?
No, if I had, that wouldn't have been a sacrifice. On the contrary, just as she warned me, my mother left the flat and its contents to the Leukemia Research Fund, in memory of my brother, of course, together with the proceeds of the house in Surrey.
You mean a bungalow in Godalming?
How do you know it was near Godalming? Why have you come here?
I told you. I came here to interview you.
Look, if you're not really interested in Buddhism, so why did you bother to come all the way here to see me? Why did you take the trouble to find out so much about me?
I am a journalist. I wanted to find you because I believe you're a complete fake. I wanted to know your background before I met you.
Or was it because you wanted ammunition with which to destroy me?
You've lived alone for a long time. You're getting fanciful.
I'm not fanciful. I just know that, without necessarily intending to be, you are a destroyer. I can tell that a mile off. I have an instinct which almost points out a potential destroyer. It's only too easy to be destructive. A cheap trick which anyone with moderate intelligence can acquire.
I'm not trying to destroy you. But I think you're fake from start to finish. Just consider yourself objectively for a moment. You decide to become a Buddhist monk. And because you've got private means, you can afford to do so. Fine. Your begging bowl is all you need to keep alive in a warm climate. Good. So far, you've harmed no one. But now your mother comes out to persuade you back. You're all she has in the world. However, you're a zealous monk, so you're adamant. You can't break your noble vows. Your mother has a heart attack. Does that affect you? Not a bit. You remain inflexible. So as soon as your mother is fit enough to move, she travels home, and you return to your work on Buddhism. Then your mother makes one last effort. She buys a large but secluded bungalow on the outskirts of Godalming. Perhaps she felt that in a bungalow rather like this one, with its neat lawn and trim flower beds, you could lead much the same life of contemplation as you lead here in Sri Lanka. But a hermit in the jungle is one thing. A recluse in Surrey is another. So being at heart an exhibitionist, you're not interested. And you send your mother a message to that effect. And soon afterwards, your mother dies. You don't give a damn. Death should not cause sorrow, since everyone succumbs to the law of impermanence. And you return calmly to the enjoyment of your periods of meditation. But then, something you hadn't reckoned for occurs. Your stomach trouble begins to get worse. and gradually the possibility of returning to England begins to take on a different perspective. To return there for the sake of your mother was out of the question, even though your decision caused her death. But to return because your stomach complaint has begun to grow serious is a very different matter. And why? Because you're afraid of death. You haven't been able to accept the doctrine of birth and rebirth. Why? Because you don't really believe in the Buddhist religion. You're just a fraud. You're not the venerable Nyan Tolly suffering in the wilderness. You're Edward Fletcher playing at a very extended game of charades.
I wonder what you were in some previous incarnation.
A leopard, perhaps.
I'm not a leopard. I was thinking more of a snake.
The criticism was intended to test you.
To test me? What have you to test me? You're not even a Buddhist.
No, but I'm a journalist. So my job is to find out the truth.
So because you're a journalist, you consider yourself justified in barging in on me with that invitation? To put insidious questions to me? And then launch into a long diatribe against me? You disgust me. I've always thought of all the mean and dishonest professions in the Western world, that of journalists was the vilest, and your behaviour today has convinced me of it.
Perhaps I'll do better in my next incarnation. Perhaps I'll be reborn the son of an economist and his wife in a flat in Pont Street. Since my actions are impertinent and my profession is vile, I hope you won't be surprised if I now sit down on your chair.
If I believed in any form of violence, I would throw you out.
You should have a try at it. The emotional release would probably do you a lot of good. But tell me this, Fletcher. Instead of threatening me with violence, why don't you try speaking words of dismissal to me? Why don't you?
Because they'd be useless.
Not at all. I promise you that if you want me to leave, I'll go. But I know you won't utter the words of dismissal, because you don't want me to leave you.
What makes you think so?
You know you still haven't convinced me, and you're still anxious to do so.
What should I care what you think?
Why, indeed? Particularly since you despise me and my profession. That's a question which I suppose only you can answer. Can't you understand that for the sake of the piece I'm going to write, if not for your sake, I want to be convinced you're genuine. I want to believe in you. I'm not a destroyer, at least not consciously. I only want to find out the truth.
Only? You say only want to find out the truth. But deep down inside ourselves, do we ever know the truth? About others, perhaps, but about ourselves? I doubt it. You say your main intention is to discover the truth. Very well, I believe you. Yes, indeed. Moreover, I apologize. I withdraw my remarks about you and your profession. I confess they were inspired by anger at the accuracy of some of your criticisms, and I'm sorry. But now I must ask you to believe me when I tell you something, not as an ordained monk, but as a man. Well, will you at least try to believe me?
Yes.
Well, it's very simple to say. It has taken me years to reach my simple conclusion. It's this. I'm not certain if I am sincere or not. I don't know if I'm genuine. Did you see my dilemma? I mean, if I'm not genuine, if I'm a complete fake, I might as well have stayed in England. But if, on the other hand, I am now genuine, if I am a true Buddhist monk, then I may, if my health lasts, I may even in this incarnation reach nirvana. Now you see why your attack on me disturbed me so much. When I shave myself, I use a looking glass, but your arrival has made me feel as if I'd been living without a mirror. For the last years, I suppose I haven't been able to examine myself with any detachment, though I could examine others. Then you turned up. And in your speech, you held the mirror straight in front of me so that I could see what I'd look like. It wasn't very pleasant.
I admit I held up a mirror of sorts. But it was a distorting mirror, such as you'd find on a pier in Brighton.
Brighton. The town where I had my first experience of sex when I was 16 on holiday from school.
Did your parents find out?
Oh, yes, they did. Indeed, they did.
And your mother was most terribly upset?
Yeah, how did you know?
Because she was so devoted to you, it obviously follows.
She was quite hysterical. She screamed at me like a maniac. She told me what I'd done was horrible and filthy. And she said things I could never forgive or forget.
It was at that moment when she was screaming at me that I decided I must get away from her as soon as I was grown up. But even now she's dead, her presence is still around. I wasn't even distressed by her heart attack. I was quite unmoved by it. It's one of the reasons why I sometimes wonder if my religious beliefs can be sincere. When I was told about her death, I quoted from our doctrine to justify my indifference. That's why, now she's gone, my attitude towards returning to England has changed. Put so bluntly, it doesn't sound pretty, does it?
No. But it sounds true.
She loved me. Yet I can only feel repugnance for her. That's why I despise myself so much.
You needn't have any doubts. No one can be as honest as you've been if he's still a fake.
If only I knew. I can be sure.
Please, don't cry. I only wanted to show you by this gesture that at last I'm now certain you're genuine.
Thank you. What does it ever do? It's getting very dark. I'm afraid it's time for you to leave.
Are those your words of dismissal?
Yes. Those are my words of dismissal. Although I don't want you to go.
Please believe my instinct. Please believe what I've just said.
Are you going to use my story?
Of course. Why do you think I came all these thousands of miles and tracked you down, made you confess you were fake? Of course, I must write your story. That's my profession.
You don't care.
Yes, I care very much.
But if you write your story in some Sunday newspaper, I'll be hunted down. I shall lose my peace of mind I found here. I beg you don't write it.
If I didn't write the story, it would lose me £5,000.
Is there no humanity in you?
Was there any humanity in you when you let your mother die? But of course I forgot. To you Buddhists, death is not important. So why not kill yourself? You have the means. You have that gun by your bed. And as you so carefully explained earlier, suicide is not frowned upon for Buddhist monks. How was it you described it? Merely anticipating the next stage in the chain of rebirth. Who knows? You might even attain nirvana.
I suppose I might.
I wonder. Anyhow, the light is fading and I must get back. I don't suppose we shall ever meet again. But thank you. At least for receiving me. I won't bow in reverence to you as I did when I arrived, but I will bow to you as a brave man.
That was A Question of Retreat by Robin Morm, starring Denham Elliott as Fletcher with John Gillett as Holden. The sound balance was by Chris Lewis. A Question of Retreat was a BBC World Service drama production.